Somebody dropped Matt Harvey in one of our leagues, and I am freaking out. How much am I, right? I mean, how much am I going to bid on Matt Harvey on waivers? This is a fab league. I mean, yeah, I'm putting a claim if it's a waiver league, but this is fab. I got to make a tough decision. Welcome to the show, everybody. It's Friday, May 20th. Adam Azer, Al Melchior, Scott White. We're going to get you ready for week 8 with some two-star pitchers. We're going to go through everything we saw last night, do some rest of season rankings, and I've got another game that I'm playing with Scott now, but I'm not going to tell you what it is until we get there. Good morning, guys. How you doing?
Good morning. Happy Friday.
Yeah. You can tell I'm in a good mood, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I don't know about the Harvey nonsense. You seemed a little stressed about that. Everybody has that decision to make because everybody who wasn't the somebody who dropped Matt Harvey is going to be putting in a claim.
Yeah, please don't drop Matt Harvey. It's a little premature, but I'm going to kick off the show.
Little.
Yeah, I'm going to kick off the show with this. Who would you rather have rest of season, Matt Harvey or Jeff Samardzija?
I would rather have Harvey, but as I said to you offline, if I had both of them, I'd be starting Samardzija and not Harvey.
Oh, yeah, you can't. I don't even see a scenario where I'd be starting Harvey right now. There's a good chance he's not even going to make a start next week.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Because they're talking about skipping him and hoping that does something after this. Well, what was clearly his worst start of the season. Real shellacking at the hands of the Nationals.
Yes. Now, I must say that he had the bases loaded with one out in the second inning. And as Drubal Cabrera booted a double play grounder, it would have ended the inning. On the next hitter, it was ball hit well into left field, but Michael Conforto couldn't make a catch that he should have made, and the floodgates opened up. So it didn't have to be this bad. However, it's very obvious something is wrong with Matt Harvey, and Scott alluded to they might skip Matt Harvey next week. They also might put him on the DL. I mean, they were just talking openly about maybe putting him on the DL, which I found interesting because before the game, Terry Collins said he's not hurt. His arm slot is higher this year, which proves his shoulder's not hurting. I don't know, some garbage like that, but
maybe he shouldn't be so high. I don't know.
Yeah, I know. It could be a mechanical thing. How much do you want Matt Harvey on your team? Somebody dropped him. Is he an absolute must-own still
yeah,
at this point?
Yeah, he is must-own. And I mean, look, there's a lot of ways you could spin the narrative. And I think the way probably this one owner didn't, and maybe a lot of owners are, is just he's not been himself all season long. And there's something clearly wrong and maybe he's hurt. But I thought he was turning it around. But the narrative I was spinning was that he had the health issues early on and then he was sick and he just never really got an opportunity to get fully well, but you know, not to the point where he wasn't going to be able to rebound. And then he did show signs up until two starts ago,
yep,
of looking like he was on the way back. So I'm looking at it as these are two bad starts in a row, and it might just be two bad starts in a row.
Or even if there wasn't that possible narrative that he's showing signs to turn it around. I mean this is Matt
right.
Harvey.
Right.
I mean, what are you going to find on waivers that will make you feel good about this decision if at some point, even if it's All-Star break, he gets back on track and pitches like the guy you drafted him to be? I don't want to pile on this guy who dropped him because, you know, I'm sure he's made plenty of good moves in his fantasy baseball playing career. But, gosh, I'm trying to find who he dropped for him. Because this what's weird. What was weird about it was,
Tyler Chatwood.
Leagues where 250 players or so are rostered. This is one of the 350 players rostered leagues, you know.
Tyler Chatwood. He dropped Matt Harvey for Tyler Chatwood.
Oh my.
Well, and that's ill-advised on two levels. I wrote something about Chatwood probably about a week and a half ago, where I said he's the fourth Rockies pitcher I would want. Because John Gray is the clear ace there. And Chad Bettis and Chris Russon have shown us some interesting things at times. So, yeah, that's not the person you would do that for.
It's tough for me to have this conversation with you guys since I will be competing directly against you guys, but we're going to have to decide how much fab we're laying out for Matt Harvey. And, I'll put it this way. I'll let you talk in a second, Scott. In a strategic sense, I'm very aggressive with fab early in the season. What I found in these fab leagues, and this is a $0 fab league, you can do $0 bids. We do bids every single night. It's not a weekly fab, it's daily fab, and you can get players for no dollars, and we start with 100. I'm pretty aggressive. I think I'm down to about $60 right now, only 8 weeks into the season, because what I've noticed is people stop paying attention when they're out of it in a roto league, and you know, toward the end of the year, you can get more players that you want. You don't have to spend a lot. And it's so rare that a guy like Matt Harvey is going to be out there on waivers. It's not like football where starting running back gets hurt and now you want to bid like 70% of your fab on a player. That just doesn't really happen. But now it's happened. And now I feel like, oh crap, I spent so much of my fab already. There's no way I'm getting Matt Harvey.
Yeah. You said you have about 60 left.
Yeah.
If it is 60. You don't even bother.
Right. Cause
I can tell you, I have a bit higher than that already in.
Wow. Okay.
My initial thought was, okay, I'm going to bid all my money on Matt Harvey. I mean, it's a league with $0. And like you said, this never happens. I can live without, you know, the unexpected call up in July that nobody stashed ahead of time. Cause 350 man roster league, most of the prospects we see coming are already owned.
But fine, let me ask you this in case anybody else has this situation. You're willing to bid over $60, over 60% of what you started with in fab on Matt Harvey. What if there really is something wrong with him and you have this dud on your team and now you've limited your flexibility to pick up players throughout the year?
Well, I think with any waiver claim, there is an expectation it's probably not going to work out. So I still think the chances of it working out for Harvey are much higher than anyone I would pick up at any point in the season. And I would say that even if again, we get to mid July and Harvey's still doing the stuff he's doing now, I would still like his chances of being, a stud on my roster better than anybody else I could pick up.
And we'll,
so
yeah,
I don't even think that's worth worrying about.
And I'll conclude this by saying you have Matt Harvey in your top 16 guys, you know, 13th for Scott, 16th for Al. Where are you moving him down to? Who would you realistically give up to get Matt Harvey? Like where is he?
Johnny Cueto immediately came to mind for me, and he's 19th. So let's see. I got Salazar Carrasco right behind him. And then you get into Cole Hamels, Carlos Martinez. So dropping him outside of my top 20, clearly.
Mm-hmm.
And you bring up Samardzija. I think it's a worthy player comparison there, because Samardzija is going to be moving up, as he already has this year. I have him 36th now, but he probably needs to be in that 25 range because he is just everything you want an ace to be this year, particularly in terms of, and he's gone more, not just seven innings or more, which, you know, seven innings is a pretty high threshold these days to begin with. He's gone more than seven innings in six of his nine starts with about a strikeout per. So he's back for sure.
What looking at the rankings is reminding me of is, remember back when we were drafting and we said there's this big drop off after 20, 21, 22. It's still there. So, I'm going to move up Nola some more, probably to 21. And that would make Salazar 22. And I would not trade Salazar for Harvey right now. So Harvey's going to be 23, just ahead of Carlos Carrasco, who I would trade for him.
Al, are you buying Jeff Samardzija?
Yeah, I am. Finally. I mean, okay. Not as, let's see, where do I have him right now? I don't have him all that high. He will get moved.
You have him 54th.
54th.
Ew.
Oh, yeah. Scott is the high man at 36.
And I'm about to go higher, so.
Yeah, I probably won't move him that high. I'd say probably upper 40s. I've got Chris Tillman 42. That seems like a pretty good comp.
Okay. All right, let's do another rest of season. Not necessarily rest of season, but Matt Harvey sparked a debate in our podcast for the People League, our 16-team league. Somebody actually said that Michael Keaton was a better Batman than Christian Bale, and I couldn't believe it. I mean, that's one of the worst. I said earlier in the year that I'd rather have Juan Nicasio than Julio Teheran. That is, this is 10 times worse than that horrible opinion. Michael Keaton over Christian Bale? Give me a break.
Well, no, look, I'm totally with you on, I think I said Christian Bale is the only Batman that matters to me.
100%.
And, you know, that's in part because I just like the tone that, that trilogy set in terms of, like, I really think Christopher Nolan's Batman, which was played by Christian Bale, of course, really transcended the superhero genres, particularly the first two of those movies.
They're the greatest.
Like, they were more like crime movies. Like, you know, it's like something you could pair to Heat or in any other movie of that genre. Then they didn't really feel like superhero movies.
Yeah, they're the
and,
best.
Not that there's anything wrong with superhero movies. There was just a sense of realism that I think sets it apart from all the others, including Michael Keaton's Batman. But this is a pretty big debate among people who are more comic book fans than I am, which is the truer Batman. But yeah, there's no topping Christian Bale for me.
Oh man. Yeah, it's an easy one. All right, who'd you rather have rest of season? Bryce Harper or Mike Trout? Al, you can go first. Bryce Harper or Mike Trout?
Hasn't changed. Bryce Harper.
They both stole bases last night. Harper is seventh. Trout is fourth. I think Harper is one spot ahead in points leagues right now. Trout is ahead of him in Roto. You know, guys, it's fun to own Mike Trout. I never get to own Mike Trout. I finally do this year. It's fun. Scott, who would you take, Bryce Harper or Mike Trout?
I would take Harper.
All right, next up, who would you guys rather have rest of season, Paul Goldschmidt or Jose Altuve?
I moved Altuve ahead. Well, I guess I can't really say move him ahead because we don't keep anything but position-by-position rankings in season. But in my mind, I moved him ahead of Goldschmidt a couple weeks ago. And so keeping him there.
Yeah, not doing that quite yet. So I'll still go Goldie.
Okay. I did not realize Jose Altuve already has 24 walks. He walked like 35 times or something like 45 times last year. He already has 24 walks, more walks than strikeouts. How sustainable is this for Jose Altuve?
I think probably not, which is, I'm going to make a comparison here with Odubel Herrera, who's obviously, you know, operating on a much lower level overall. But, you know, he had a blistering walks pace in April, which is, you know, regressed in May. So, you know, I just think that when you make this extreme of a change, there's going to be regression, but the regression might still land you someplace that's much better than where you were before. So no, I don't think it's sustainable, and no, I don't think that it matters that it's not sustainable.
Right, right. All right, I got a lot for you today. I got five guys for you here. Who's most likely to be a star this season? Most likely to be a star: Stephen Piscotty, Gregory Polanco, Daniel Murphy, Nick Castellanos, Jackie Bradley.
Gregory Polanco, I would say. Because I still don't think he's shown us the full extent of his power when you consider how hard he hits the ball in terms of exit velocity and the fact that he's on like 100 walk pace. I mean, you get a guy who, first of all, he's already on pace for 2020, just about, with 100 walks, and that's already star level. And if he does improve his home run pace, as I think he can, then, you know, you're talking maybe top 15, top 10 outfielder in fantasy. So, Piscotty would be my second choice, actually, but Polanco, I think, is the runaway pick here.
And I'm going Polanco too. I'm probably still the low guy on him, but I've, you know, brought him up significantly in the rankings. I'm pretty much bought in. And yeah, you know, what Scott said, just in terms of the complete game that Polanco has and the remaining upside, but I had to think a bit about Jackie Bradley because I think he's finally breaking out in earnest, and he's a pretty exciting player too.
How about Piscotty though? I wanted to just talk more about him as he had two doubles yesterday in a, you know, very high scoring game where Michael Wacha and John Gray were terrible.
Mm-hmm.
Piscotty's batting .329 with five home runs. His slash line pretty similar from last year to this year, but a little more power.
The whole thing has been similar.
Not even more power, just better average, which brought the slugging up. But yeah, no, I'm sorry, Scott. It's very two straight good years now for Piscotty so far.
And the reason if I have any skepticism about Piscotty. It's the fact that he has like a 380 BABIP like he did a year ago. And, you know, for any player, you'd assume that's unsustainable. And it probably is to some degree, but I think it's safe now to assume, if based on, you know, the fact that it's carried over into this year almost exactly, that he's not going to be the standard 300 BABIP you would expect for player X doesn't apply for him. He's going to be a high BABIP guy. So, well, there is some regression coming. It's not going to really lower his standing in fantasy from where it already is.
And I'm going to disagree with that, because I think if he had remained the same player he was last year, I would agree. But even though the stats are identical, this is kind of weird. The stats are identical, but the approach is very different because he's been much more of a pull hitter this year. So, you know, I think that Piscotty could be due for more power, but I'm not so sure he can maintain a 300 batting average.
All right, let's move on. And coming up later in the show, we'll talk about Chris Sale. We'll talk about Nate Carnes. Carlos Gonzalez has been really cold. Josh Donaldson has been cold. I even have something to say about Dellin Betances. But that was most likely to be a star this year. Who's most likely to be less than 30% owned by August? Most likely to be less than 30% owned in August. Just drop them pretty much all over. Randall Grichuk, Justin Upton, Carlos Gomez, Nomar Mazara, Adam Wainwright.
Well, I actually think there's three strong candidates here in Grichuk, Gomez, and Wainwright. But if I have to pick one, I'm going to go Gomez, because yeah. I just really don't believe in him anymore. But I was starting to lean towards Grichuk because I'm really just annoyed by the injury proneness that he's shown.
Yes, and now he's injured. He's day-to-day with back tightness.
Yeah, yeah. So it's a close race there, but yeah, I think Gomez is just on the verge of fantasy oblivion here.
Is there anyone on that list? I guess Justin Upton we're not touching, but Grichuk, Gomez, Mazara, Wainwright. That right now you would say there's no way I'm dropping this guy. If there's somebody I want on waivers that's other than Matt Harvey, there's no way I'm dropping either Grichuk, Gomez, Mazara, or Wainwright.
Well, I'm not really sure why you even put Mazara on here. I could understand, like, Upton is the highest, the least likely to me, but I understand why the other four are on here. I'm not really sure why Mazara's on here.
Okay, well, Chu's coming back, so I'm assuming Mazara's still going to play, but am I wrong, or has he just not really been all that
great? He's tailed off, but he's still been pretty good, and there could be, you know, even better performance to come from Mazara. So, I mean, look, if I could see dropping Mazara for Harvey in a shallow league.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, sure.
Obviously.
But that's
yeah.
obviously not a situation you're going to face in most leagues. There's not going to be somebody I'd likely drop Mazara for. And yeah, Upton is also obviously not to be dropped in a – I'm not going to drop him in a league.
I'm not dropping Wainwright either. I mean, he's behind those other two, but I'd still not really like. I know after he got rocked two starts ago, I was finally like, okay, I'm moving him way down my rankings, and I did, but I kept him in the top 70, so that's still ownership territory. And then he bounces back with his best start of the season, and I just feel like the underlying factors aren't really explaining the poor production, because his velocity's been fine now for 7 starts in a row. His swings and misses are going up on his curveball. I think there's some rust to play here. There's some feeling his way through his mechanics after missing time and having surgery. But I think he's on the right track.
Now, when you say Wainwright's velocity has been fine, what are you comparing it to?
2014, when he went 20-7 with a 2.40-something ERA.
Okay. I did notice one kind of weird thing with him. It's not that he's been very good against lefties, but he's been worse against righties. Which is why I wasn't shocked that he did well against Colorado, because most of their best hitters are lefties. It's just something to keep in mind. Righties are crushing Adam Wainwright this year.
I got a stat line totally wrong from 2014, by the way. It was 29 with a 2.38 ERA.
Oh,
still very good.
That's going to be all right. That's going to work. I found that Colorado start discouraging, actually, even though, you know, the end result was great for fantasy owners. But it was the same underlying problems of allowing too much contact and that contact, you know, being air driven, which is a very awkward way of saying that he allowed a lot of fly balls. So until those things change, I'm highly skeptical of Wainwright bouncing back.
Let's get to the news. Shin-Soo Choo is back. He got off to a slow start, was batting 188 with no extra base hits, but four walks in only five games. So, Choo, Desmond, Mazzara, your Rangers outfield most nights. You guys feel that way?
Yes.
Yeah.
And where's Choo in your rankings? Is he a top 30 outfielder?
I think he's just shy for me. He is, 38 for me. And we're all at either 37 or 38.
Piscotty or Choo, rest of season?
Piscotty.
I'm gonna stick with Chu.
Okay, I'll stick with Chu too. Yeah.
No, with Chu.
Oh. Yeah. Josh Reddick fractured his thumb, could miss 4 to 6 weeks. That stinks. Guy's been number 22 outfielder in points, number 21 in Roto.
Ugh.
Anything interesting for the A's?
In terms of a replacement, I don't.
Mark Canna? Oh, wait.
Yeah, he's hurt.
All right.
I'm not sure where they go. And it's funny because they've got a lot of great prospects, but they're all in the infield. So, unless I'm forgetting somebody, I don't think I am.
Okay. Evan Gattis is 54% owned. It says here he should be more owned. He caught for the first time this season. Gattis went 2 for 3
finally,
with a home run.
We've been talking about it for months, it feels like.
I know. And I don't know when it's going to happen. It might take a few weeks for him to get 5 games at catcher, but still, 54% owned at that position and 2 homers since coming off the DL. If he were available, I'd pick him up. How about you, Evan Gattis?
Absolutely. And I think even in a points league, which is his weaker format, just because catcher's been so bad this year. Jason Castro's done okay at the plate recently, but the Astros have kind of this glut of corner infielder, corner outfielder, DH types that I'm sure they'd like to get in their lineup more. Gattis earned rave reviews with this performance, and I don't think it should go unnoticed that Colin McHugh had his best start of the season throwing to him.
That's a good point. Yeah.
I watched him a lot when he was the Braves' primary catcher, and I really don't understand who decided he couldn't catch or why, because it wasn't anything glaring like you'd normally think of when, you know, a team just decides a guy can't play a position.
All right, next up, we got Steven Matz pitching tonight. Jose Bautista led off for Toronto at Minnesota, try to get that lineup going, and they scored 3 runs in 11 innings.
You know who might be leading off for the Blue Jays soon?
Who's that?
It's Devin Travis.
Oh, ooh, that'd be nice.
They've been talking about him as a leadoff guy.
That'd be nice.
Yeah.
Aledmys Diaz batted second for St. Louis as Jahani Peralta begins a rehab assignment. Randall Grichuk day-to-day with back tightness, as we mentioned. Chris Sale, guys. Chris Sale became the first pitcher since 2008 to win his first 9 starts, the second pitcher in baseball history to win his first 9 games with a sub-2 ERA. Woo! Chris Sale. Chris Sale or Max Scherzer, rest of season?
I'm going to stick with Scherzer. I know there's a huge gulf between the two of them right now, but I think they're bound to go in opposite directions. I just can't believe that Scherzer's going to continue to give up quite this many home runs. And Sale's not been getting the strikeouts. I mean, look, Sale's really good. He's an elite pitcher. But I think to maintain pace with the Scherzers of the world, he's going to have to miss more bats going forward. I could see him, Sale, regressing quite a bit.
Well, I could see his strikeout rate picking up a whole lot too. So, yeah. I mean, there's a couple ways you could look at that. He's done this well and he hasn't even gotten as many strikeouts yet. So, I think it's time to move Sale ahead.
Chris Sale said after his start against the Yankees, which was a complete game, 2 starts ago, that hitters saw that he struck out like 270 guys last year or whatever, and they are swinging earlier in the count. They don't want to strike out against him. They're being more aggressive. And look, it's translating it just fine in fantasy success. And he's pitching
what it's
really
allowing
deep
him to do is throw 3 complete games already.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not such a bad trade-off.
More notes for you here. Texas could be moving to a new retractable roof stadium in the upcoming years, according to the Dallas Morning News. But that's not the most interesting Texas Rangers note. This is a barbecue restaurant in Texas is giving Rugned Odor free food for life and selling T-shirts that say, quote, Rugned eats free, end quote, because he punched Jose Bautista in the face. Now, all right. I'm not going to claim to be like holier than thou or the greatest person in the world. And I'm not even going to say that I wasn't entertained by the fight and that I didn't watch the replay of the punch like five times. Be like, oh, whoa.
But only five times.
Yeah. But come on. Like, we can't just celebrate that. That's a little, that's wrong to me.
Yeah.
And that does not sit well with me. Unlike Delicious Barbecue, this does not sit well with me.
Yeah. I'm sort of revulsed and entertained by this all at the same time.
Yeah, fine. That is a very accurate way to put it.
But have, you know, this is a con, I think it's worth pointing out, I'm making some assumptions here. This is a conversation between three guys who have never punched somebody in the face.
Correct.
Is that fair to say?
Correct. Yes.
That is accurate on my part.
Okay. Yeah. You, okay. Adam?
Yeah, I've never punched anyone, no.
All right.
We talk about prospects a lot. Let's just kind of give people a look. Who's next? Who's next in line?
Jameson Taillon.
Yeah, actually, that's a great call.
Or Trey Turner. But I'm gonna say Taillon if I have to pick one. I just, there is maybe a critical date coming up here for Turner. I think it's May 30th, May 31st, one of those two. Where even with the 45 days of service time he got last year, if the Nationals wait until that date to call him up, then, they get an extra year of team control. This year doesn't count as a year of service. So, that may be exactly what they're waiting for, in which case we're less than 2 weeks away from seeing Trey Turner.
And that is, I was watching the MLB Plus broadcast. I don't know if either of you guys caught that last night, Nationals and the Mets, where they,
I didn't,
did the, you know, broadcast with all the Statcast stuff in real time, which was pretty cool. But they were speculating the very same thing about Turner. So I think those are two great calls. And I'll add a third name, Hunter Renfro. Because the Padres, they're dangling Matt Kemp on the trade market. They've recently benched John Jay. So it seems like they're kind of priming the situation there to get Renfro up in the starting lineup.
And Turner, shortstop, could give you a lot of steals. Does he hit?
Yep.
Does he just run?
Yep. He would be playing shortstop. He played second base last year, so that's the only place he's eligible in fantasy now, but it would be dual eligibility very soon.
I think of Micah Johnson and Billy Hamilton as these amazing speed guys who couldn't hit a lick when they were called up. Is there a concern with you with Trey Turner too, or is he a better hitter?
I think he's a better hitter, but I also don't have tremendous expectations for Turner. You know, just because I'm not sure how strong or major league ready his other skills are. And I'm not saying he's bad. I'm just not, he just hasn't dominated, you know, as a power source. I mean, he is hitting for average, but the contact skills are just merely okay.
I wouldn't expect him to ever dominate as a power source though. I think of him as like a speedier Francisco Lindor.
I think that's fair.
I want to mention some deep league targets here. Players who are widely available. I want to know if they're under-owned, if people should have them on their radar in the shallower mixed leagues. Leonis Martin, showing some power and some speed, just hitting 206, unfortunately. Rajay Davis, 23% owned. We did talk about him yesterday, but he's got 10 steals now, and, 23% owned, he could do worse. He's right in there with the Malik Smith, Cameron Maybins of the world in terms of ownership percentage, Rajay Davis. Tyler Wilson, Junior Guerra and Ivan Nova, not guaranteed to stay in the rotation, but I think he will. But Martin, Rajay Davis, Tyler Wilson, Junior Guerra, Ivan Nova. Al, I know there's someone on this list that you want to talk about.
Oh, yeah, Junior Guerra. I'm very excited about him after this start. He was almost completely under the radar for me, but there were some inklings that he, you know, is capable of this kind of performance, and he's relief eligible, which I think is probably at least 50% why I'm excited about him. And so I was looking for leagues to add him in. I went to the head-to-head leagues first, even though they're the shallower formats typically. I think as a SPARP, Guerra's got some real appeal.
Mm-hmm. I was watching the highlights, and yeah, 96 mile per hour fastball with a split finger that's 10 miles an hour slower. So, I mean, still really hard, but there's enough differentiation there that it's almost kind of like a changeup, and some high strikeout rates in the minors the last couple years. So I'm with you. That's the one I'm most excited about on this list.
Wow. Okay. Would you prefer him to Chris Devensky, who,
yep,
you know,
definitely. Yeah.
Would you, Would you rather have Junior Guerra or Tyler Chatwood?
Nicasio's in the discussion.
All right, fine. Then we'll go to Nicasio then. Yeah.
I'd rather him than Nicasio, than Finnegan.
Really?
Oh, yeah, easily Finnegan.
Oh, Finnegan, yeah. But
I would still take Nicasio over him, but it's close. I mean, another start like this, and it changes.
All right, anybody else we need to talk about on this list?
Yeah, Martin's intriguing me, and he's frustrating because, you know, he's got this really surprising power-speed combination, especially the power part. But, yeah, like you said, he's not hitting for average at all, and there's not really a whole lot of signs that suggest that he should do a whole lot better than that because he's achieving all this power with a very aggressive approach, pulling a lot of balls, hitting a lot more flies than he typically has in the past, and who he's sort of reminding me of is not Melvin Upton, but BJ Upton, you know, the version we saw at the Rays, who, you know, was a 2020 guy, even 20, you know, 30 guy, who hit in the 240s. And I think I'd be very glad at this point for Leandro Martin to hit 240, but I think he'll come close enough that he'll have that kind of appeal. So while it's frustrating, I mean, that is somebody that you at least think about starting in the Stare Mix Roto League.
Let's play a game. You guys ready? Okay. Ready to have some fun?
No.
Not yet, but...
Yeah, all right. Yeah.
Hype it up a little, and maybe I'll get there.
Let's play Name That Player!
Yeah!
Such a long time since we played
it
this.
It has been a long time. All right. First player, here we go. We'll go first person. I am batting 273 with 7 home runs, 26 runs batted in, 27 runs and 1 steal in 3 attempts. My average fly ball distance is about 10 feet less this year than it was last year. I am a top 10 third baseman. I have 2 first names. I was the 2nd overall pick in the 2013 draft.
Michael Franco?
No.
He wasn't picked that high.
Oh, the second pick in the 2013 draft?
Mm-hmm.
Was that... But Bryant is not a first name.
Mike Moustakas is not a first. No, because he wasn't 2013. He was way before that.
Did you just say that Bryant is not a first name?
Not a common one.
It's a.
Okay,
are you
Chris
kidding?
Bryant.
Thank you. Chris Bryant is the answer.
No, because that was my first thought, and then I'm like, but no, Bryant's not a first name, so I have to.
Yes,
have to
it is.
On.
Bryant
Franco's
is a hundred...
more of a first name than Bryant is.
Yeah, I feel so stupid saying Mike Moustakas.
That's okay. That's what Name That Player does to you. Puts you out
makes you look stupid.
I haven't talked about Chris Bryant, I don't think, since the season started. Maybe a little bit. He's actually, it's another guy, his slash line, just like Piscotty, it's very similar to last year. The steals are down a little bit, but he just hasn't really taken the next step yet. What do you project for Chris Bryant going forward?
Better things. just because it's, you know, player in his second year, it's not unusual for him to take a step back. We saw this last season with him where he'd be incredible for a month and very underwhelming for a month or more. And I think we've seen more of the underwhelming, but my overall assessment of him hasn't changed. I think there's just tremendous upside for him in terms of power and also steals and better batting average.
Well, the Cubs changed his swing this offseason. I forget where I read it, but he had a lot of uppercut in his swing, which is why we saw these like towering home runs from him last year that we're not seeing this year. It's more level now, more line drive oriented, supposed to make him a more well-rounded hitter. But I wonder if it's compromised his power too much. It's weird because I feel like the Cubs changed Anthony Rizzo's swing too, but they did just the opposite to it. They made it so he would get more loft in his swing.
But here's the thing. First of all, the strikeouts are way down for Bryant. 36 and 38 games this year, 199 and 151 games last year. And I'm just going to read you his slash lines. 2015 slash line for Chris Bryant. 275, 369, 488. 2016, 273, so 2 points less. 356, 13 points less. 474, 14 points less. It's really not that much of a difference. It's probably one home run away from having, you know, a better slugging percentage or the same.
Yeah, exactly. The power level is pretty much the same as it was last year. I think we all expected him to take a step up this year. And so, like I said, that rest of season expectation for me is not different. I don't know why he's not running as much, but I expect that will change. And you mentioned he's dropped the batting average or the strikeout rate significantly, and he's traded that off for a lower BABIP. You expected that trade off, but I just think that there's better things to come for him. And, you know, you mentioned the average fly ball distance has dropped 10 feet, which is, you know, not what you want to see, but it's not super drastic.
I just want to finish my thought that, you know, I'd be too afraid to trade him at his current value because of what we anticipate him being. And I had a chance in the podcast league. Somebody offered me Todd Frazier and Vince Velasquez, desperately needed a relief pitcher at the time. And I almost took it because I think, you know, Todd Frazier last year was not any worse than Chris Bryant last year. But I thought, oh, man, what if Chris Bryant blows up during the summer and has this 45 homer season? I'm going to hate that I did this.
Yeah, no, I totally feel that. All right, next, name that player. Another hitter. Okay, here we go. I have been really bad this year. My hitting has been extremely awful this season. In 2016, I am struggling to hit. I am batting 171 with one extra base hit. I have 8 walks to 43 strikeouts. I have never once in my career had even 2 strikeouts per walk. Now I'm at more than 5 strikeouts per walk. And I have 2 first names.
all right. You know, I've heard of parents are naming their kids like last names as first names.
No, this is legit.
This is legit?
2 first names. All right, I'll give you more clues. I play in the American League East.
Who is that?
One extra base hit?
One extra base hit. And I'm an everyday player, and last year I hit over 20 home runs.
Gosh.
I used to play in the NL Central, and previously before that, the AL East. I'm a catcher.
Oh, no, AL Central.
I'm a catcher for the Blue Jays.
Oh, Russell Martin.
There you go. Hey, congratulations.
Gosh, you should have had me, and I'm really, really bad this year. And yeah, the strikeout to walk ratio I'd seen before, and that just didn't stick with me. Yeah, no, I don't know what's wrong with Russell Martin.
I don't know what's wrong with us. We suck.
Yeah. Our performance is even worse.
We're going to get so many tweets like, man, I knew it on the second clue.
What is going on with Russell Martin? Holy cow. I can't believe this.
That is my assessment.
Done?
And I'm tired of waiting him out. So Wilson Ramos, well, probably not at this point. I dropped him a couple weeks ago. In a one catcher league, I'm talking. 2 catcher league, you can't because there's just not enough options.
I'd sit him for Jason Castro right now.
But would you drop him?
No.
Yeah.
Hey, full slate of games tonight on FanDuel. That means a lot of good cheap hitting options. So fun to set your lineup when you're searching for bargains, hidden gems that others might not be aware of. And that's what will make you good at FanDuel. That's what will make you a winner. Gonna put some cash in your pocket. We like that. Over 1 million users have won money on FanDuel. Join them. Sign up. Start playing today. It's fantasy baseball. It starts at just $1 per contest. Tournaments, 50-50s, whatever you want to do, however often you want to play, however you want to play your daily fantasy baseball, play it on FanDuel.com, the best place to play your daily fantasy. Now sign up today, enter your first league, and either win a cash prize in that league, or FanDuel is going to automatically refund your entry fee. That's pretty sweet. Up to $10. For additional play. So you basically get a $10 free roll if you go to FanDuel.com, click the microphone in the upper right-hand corner, and sign up with our promo code HOMERUN. The promo code is HOMERUN with no spaces. That's our promo code on FanDuel.com. Take a look at the most added players now in CBSSports.com leagues, and then we can talk two-star pitchers. Also want to get to Michael Wacha. There's really a lot to get to today, but all right. Most added. I got rid of that. Oh, here we go. The most added players in fantasy are Matt Andrees, 54% owned, starting tonight. That should be interesting. Sam Dyson.
Tomorrow.
What'd you say?
I was predicting most drop tomorrow.
You think so?
I don't really know, but I could see that happening.
But yeah, now at 54%, which seems odd for somebody who's not making 2 starts next week.
Yeah.
And somebody who's not got a completely secure grasp on a rotation spot and maybe just isn't even going to be that great.
Okay. So Andrees is 1, Sam Dyson's 2, Danny Valencia is 3. Valencia is only 64% owned. I think he's under owned. Scott, I know you probably agree.
Oh, yeah.
Al, how about you? Danny Valencia, 64%?
A little underowned. Third base is pretty deep now. And obviously red hot this week. But, you know, I could see people having a roster crunch at third base or corner infield and just having options that they like more.
Steve Pierce is 32% owned. Melvin Upton is 44% owned. This is a very interesting most added list. Tyler Duffy still 41% owned for some reason.
Ridiculous.
Yeah, it's weird.
Gotten less ridiculous, but yeah, still ridiculous.
Marcell Ozuna, 86%. Trevor Bauer, 57%. Alex Wood, 61%. Still good options out there. John Gray, 50%. Well, John Gray got just crushed yesterday, guys, at St. Louis.
Yeah.
What do you think? Does that, lower your enthusiasm?
He made a deal with the devil. Give me a good start at home and I'll have a bad start on the road.
Cardinals are pretty brutal against righties. So
yeah, they are.
I'm not going to hold it too much against Gray.
And I'm glad you said that. I'm going to tell you right now that I'm not going to hold it too much against Corey Kluber when he gets lit up tonight at the Red Sox. I'm just going to tell you.
That's very kind of you, Adam.
At Fenway Park is just a horror story right now. You do not want to be pitching there against the Red Sox.
I have to admit, I don't have really high hopes. I certainly would not be playing Kluber in DFS.
Adam Duvall, Jonathan VR, Mike Foltynewicz, Mike Napoli, Wade Miley. These guys are on the most added list. Anyone really, really exciting you?
I wouldn't say exciting me, but Miley is, you know, somebody I've been touting for most of the season. And I have a dilemma in one of my leagues about whether or not to drop him for another pitcher, you know, like a two-star pitcher for next week. And I opted to keep him around because, just looking at what he's done compared to, the other players on the roster, on, pitchers on waivers, he had more fantasy points per start than pretty much everybody I was looking at. And I've thought of Miley as somebody who's actually underperformed this year. So, you know, I think, expecting better things from him going forward, he stacks up pretty nicely against a lot of waiver options.
You know who is also pretty available, about 50%, no, 61% owned, is Nate Karns. Now, I watched a lot of his start yesterday, and he didn't have the same velocity he had against Houston a couple starts ago when I was like, whoa, dude's throwing 95 miles per hour. But this was a guy going to Baltimore and facing a lot of good right-handed pitchers and hitters. Alice pointed out that Karns has reverse splits. And he did well. 5 innings, 4 hits, 1 run, no walks, 5 strikeouts. He's got a 3.33 ERA, over a strikeout per inning. So who would you rather have, Karns or Miley?
Yeah, that's a very tough one. I think I would, in spite of the start against the Orioles, I think I would go Miley just because I don't trust. I think with Karns, it is going to be more of a matchups issue with him than for Miley.
Scott?
I'll take Karns. I just, I got to be honest. I really don't understand the appeal of Miley.
Well, and especially in a points league, which is what I was looking at, the league I was describing.
Yeah.
Very efficient.
Okay.
And I know you don't like the ERA, but I think the ERA is misleading.
Well, and, you know, Karns' drawback is that he's not so efficient. So there's kind of a contrast there, but I'll take the strikeout guy because I feel like in addition to the strikeouts, there are some other benefits that go with striking out batters. I do think Karns, while Miley may have some upside, Karns pretty much is who he is. And that is maybe undervalued, but there's not a lot of room to grow from here.
What about Karns or Duffy, or Karns, Miley, or Duffy, depending on your favorite Mariner? And really, you have to start considering the wins factor. I think it does make a pretty big difference. But who would you guys rather have in that trio?
I'd still take Duffy in a heartbeat, not even thinking about it, versus either of the Mariners pitchers, just because I think Duffy's got the skills. Granted, it's not, you know, he's only got one win so far, and that was his most recent start. But, and look, he may not be a 500 pitcher, you know, for the Twins, but I just think he's going to make up for it compared to those two guys, with what he does, with strikeout to walk.
All right. Back to yesterday's action. Two guys who are slumping. Are you concerned at all about Carlos Gonzalez or Josh Donaldson?
No. The one concern I have between the two is that Carlos Gonzalez gets traded, and that opens up the Corey Dickerson can of worms for him.
Mm. Okay. And Dellin Betances is 49% on. I just want to bring this up, that Betances is a little bit different this year because he doesn't really throw multiple innings anymore, especially now that they have Betances, Chapman, Miller, or Betances, Miller, Chapman. So far this year, Betances has three appearances of more than one inning pitched. By this point last year, he had made seven such appearances. Now, he does have more strikeouts this year than he had at this point last year, but I think that rate's probably going to come down a little bit. Still great, but I think it's less important to own Betances this year than it was last year. Do you guys agree?
Totally agree. Have thought about dropping him in a league where I own him.
You did drop him in the 16-team categories league.
Okay, yeah. Well, and I'm thinking about dropping him in another league.
Yeah, and I didn't pick him up because he's just not doing exactly what he's been doing in the past in terms of innings.
And also not the backup option for saves.
Right, right. It's another good point.
And while you're bringing up reliever innings, Dylan Bundy went three deep yesterday. Mm-hmm. Seems like he's maybe getting a little stretched out. So that's something to watch for later in the season, maybe joining the Orioles rotation at some point.
In our rotation, we talked about Chris Sale. Steven Strasburg struck out 10 Mets in six innings with one run allowed, and he's got 76 Ks in 61 innings. Jason Hamill had a rough one at Milwaukee without Ryan Braun or Lucroy in the lineup. Michael Wacha. Hey, Scott, our trade involving Taijuan Walker and Jared Eichhoff and Michael Wacha, that's been a real blockbuster so far, huh?
Yeah, stinker. It's more like it.
What, do you guys just kind of feel... This is how I felt about Wacha. I feel like at the end of the year, his numbers are going to be there. They're going to be solid, but it's just I just never trust him, no matter what the matchup. I just never trust him.
Yeah, I think you just kind of have to start him all the time because of that. And I think most of his owners don't have so many quality pitchers that that's really a dilemma. But that's the approach I intend to take with him now that I own him. I get what you're saying, though. Like, he doesn't have... Like, even his good starts, it's not like, you know, 7-3 hit innings with 11 strikeouts. It's a little more subtly good than that. So you never feel great about him.
And I also feel worse about him with Aledmys Diaz behind him because...
It's a good point.
He doesn't strike out that many guys, obviously, Wacha. And against the Dodgers two starts ago, Diaz just killed him. I mean, he made three errors. I'm not sure if they were all with Wacha in the game, but he really hurt him. I don't know how the rest of their defense stacks up, but, you know, maybe when Peralta comes back, things get better. If they figure out another place for Diaz. I have no idea, so I'm going to stop talking. Does Colin McHugh feel like a must-own guy after this start, or still not so much?
Well, I wouldn't say he's must-own, but I've just noticed over the last 2-3 weeks that he just had several flags for being a guy who should have been a much, much better than he was up to this point. So, you know, Scott mentioned the fact that McHugh was throwing to Gattis and had, you know, this good start. Maybe some of that is Gattis. I think some of it is just that he, you know, he should be having more starts like this. I don't think he's going to be a big strikeout guy this year. I mean, it was really only 2 years ago where we saw that consistently from McHugh. But he's just really, I think... been using his command to good effect and avoiding hard contact. So I don't think, because he doesn't have the strikeouts and I don't expect he will, I don't think he's must own. Mm-hmm. But I think I've had a hard time trying to buy low on him for whatever reason.
Yeah.
But I think if you can buy low on McHugh, it's a great idea.
I noticed he's not throwing his curveball nearly as much this year, which I find odd because part of the reason the Astros bought into him when no other team would is because they liked the number of rotations he got on his curveball. They thought that could be a good pitch for him. So that gives me some pause.
Here are your two-star pitchers to consider for Fantasy Week 8. Wow. Well,
time flies.
I'm just trying. I'm doing the scan for the guys who are at Colorado. There's no way you're sitting Johnny Cueto in a two-star week at Colorado.
Nope.
Nope. He does not fall below that line.
Does Bumgarner have one start at Colorado? And if so, would you consider sitting him?
No, you don't. You don't sit him. But I do agree for him and his fly ball tendencies that might not be the best start for Bumgarner.
Michael Wacha in a roto league against the Cubs at home and at Washington. You cool with that?
Yep.
Not necessarily. I mean, he's borderline for me.
Drew Pomeranz at San Francisco, at Arizona.
I'm fine with that.
Scott, we said no yesterday, but how about you, Adam Wainwright, Cubs and at Washington?
Not in a roto league. I'd probably gamble in a points league that one of those starts is respectable and the other isn't so bad that it ruins the first of them.
Nate Evaldi, Toronto and at Tampa Bay.
Don't make me. No, I just don't trust him.
It's just interesting because the Blue Jays really aren't a tough matchup right now. They strike out more than almost any team in baseball, and they have like three guys who hit, and only one of them is hitting right now. I don't even know if any of them are really hitting right now.
Yeah, it's kind of tempting because then he gets the Rays, and he gets them at Tropicana Field, and Evaldi's not a lefty because I've sort of been lulled into thinking, oh, I'll start this lefty against the Rays because the Rays strike out so much, but they hit lefties really well. But, it just comes down to I do not trust Evaldi's consistency.
You know which team leads the majors in home runs?
Oh, don't even. We already had this as the trivia question on yesterday's show, Scott.
Oh, okay. Well, I wasn't on yesterday's show.
I know. But it is the Rays. Yeah, it's very funny. That 22nd in runs scored going into yesterday's games, yet first in home runs. Jimmy Nelson at Atlanta and Cincinnati. Got to like those matchups, right?
Yes, I do. I do like, and Nelson's had a string of good matchups, and I forget who he faces. Maybe it's the Braves again. I remember in week 9, a one start week, I think it's a good matchup for him. And, you know, coming off a great start against the Cubs, I think you could be fooled into thinking, you want me to leave a spot here, Adam, so you can plug in?
No, it's okay. I don't want to kill it.
Well, you could be fooled into thinking that Nelson's broken out. The splits against lefty batters are much better this year, but he's still walking a lot of lefties. He's given up the bulk of his home runs to lefties. I am not buying him as a must start yet.
All right,
but this week, start him.
How about Matt Moore at Miami and home against the Yankees?
I'm good with that.
Me too.
All right, so then we got Matt Latos, Josh Tomlin, Bartolo Colon, Doug Fister, R.A. Dickey, Shelby Miller. With one of those starts being against San Diego for Miller at Pittsburgh and home against San Diego. Brandon Finnegan, Nick Tropiano, Tom Kohler. Ooh, I kind of like Kohler. Home against Tampa Bay and at Atlanta. He's good at home.
Heath was trying to talk me into this yesterday. And
I like him from a sense of like, there's not that much out there that's widely available that I'd be excited about. If there were
gross.
One, it'd be Kohler.
He's probably as good as anybody. I actually, this is probably just as crazy, but I'm actually thinking of maybe taking a chance with Josh Tomlin, even though those are scary matchups and venues, for a guy who gives up a lot of home runs. But, you know, especially in a roto league, he's very good for whip. And, you know, he's good enough at whip that the home runs really haven't been hurting him that much.
You said Tomlin?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, but no beef with that. Tomlin, though, he's like 54% owned. And
but so he's going to be available still most likely in a 12-team mixed. Not in a deeper league where, you know, you could pick up Kohler or Tropiano at 18%.
Okay. Read the column. We rank all the two-star pitchers. So read it at fantasynews.cbsports.com. And let's finish up with... I'll give you a quick DFS rundown and we'll read some emails. Tonight, 15 games starting at 7 o'clock p.m. or later, so full slate on FanDuel, or you can play the late games, whatever you want to do. Three pitchers I'm considering, because I don't want to do Kluber. Who's the most expensive pitcher? Now, Arrieta's got the Giants at the Giants. I don't think that's bad. Probably avoid it, but yeah, I'm sure he'll be fine. But three guys, Nola for 9,000 against Atlanta, Kazmir for 8,000 at San Diego, but I did notice San Diego is the worst lineup in baseball in terms of OPS against righties. They are 19th worst against lefties, so they're better against lefties. And Tyler Duffy, 6,400 against Toronto. My pick is Nola. How about you guys?
Nola all the way. You know, it's the Braves. I know Whistler has a similar ERA to Nola, but I think that's much more smoke and mirrors. Nola's the guy.
Some matchups you could consider. Sorry, Scott. St. Louis lefties against Eddie Butler. Maybe see if Matt Adams is in the lineup. Now, look, if you go with Nola, you can get about $3,200 per person. So you can still spend a lot of money. Cleveland lefties against Clay Buchholz. Buchholz has been terrible against lefties. Cleveland's been red hot. So Carlos Santana, 2 home runs yesterday. He's only faced Buchholz like 7 or 8 times, but he's done well. He's only 2,900, Carlos Santana. Martin Prado is 9-for-18 against Tanner Roark. He doesn't really do anything but single, though. Oakland righties against CC Sabathia. So Danny Valencia at 3,300. Marcus Semien at 2,800. He's only 1-for-8 against Sabathia, but makes sense there. The Cubs against Jake Peavy. I think the Cubs could break out. They've been a little cold lately. I think Peavy's one of the worst pitchers in baseball, even coming off a good start. Trace Thompson going up against Christian Friedrich. He's 2,900. There are two hitters that are $2,300 that make a lot of sense, especially if you go with Arrieta and you need to save money. Yasiel Puig is 2,300 against Christian Friedrich. Ben Revere is 2,300 against Justin Nicolino at Miami. It's not like Nicolino's terrible, but like you're getting a leadoff hitter for the Nationals at 2,300. You're getting Puig at 2,300. If Puig is a big game and you had him in your lineup, you're winning a tournament tonight.
Revere's batting 127, Adam.
I know, but look, he just came off the DL. I think he had a couple hits yesterday, right?
Just come off the DL.
He's like, yeah, it's like 60 at bats. I understand, but 2,300 for a player who we know is a 300 hitter for 3 straight years.
Yeah, no, I actually like that as a value pick against Justin Nicolino. You know, who's just a walking contact dispenser.
I don't even think he's gotten a stolen base yet.
I'm not going to sit here and say that he's great, but this is what you do in FanDuel. You take guys who haven't done anything that you know are better than this, that are undervalued.
Well, you don't have to take a guy who hasn't done anything. You can take a guy like Puig who's done some things, just not very recently.
Sure, I'd rather have Puig than Ben Revere. Yeah. Okay. Emails, fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Let's go to Bob from Chicago. He says, "Dear Sarah, John, and the T-1000.
Terminator.
That's Terminator True. 2, but I'll let it slide out. Head-to-head categories.
For me, that's pretty good.
Yeah, that is good. Head-to-head categories league, I need one player to fill a utility spot. Byung-ho Park or Lucas Duda?
Park.
Yep, park it.
From Michael, grade the trade, 10-team points league. I like this trade. It's a good trade here. You know, even. Aledmys Diaz and Zach Greinke. Giving up Aledmys Diaz and Zach Greinke. Getting Aaron Nola and Trevor Story.
Yeah, this is cool. It's a very, very even.
I'll give it a C-. I do think for a points league especially, I have a slight preference for Diaz over Story, and I still rank Greinke ahead of Nola, too. So you're losing the better player in both spots, I think.
Yeah, it's just a slight edge for the other team. So yeah, I guess I'll go C-2.
The Yankees raved about Greinke, said he was absolutely nasty. He's not one of those pitchers that you watch on TV and say, oh, he looks filthy or whatever, because you know, can't really appreciate how good his changeup is maybe or how much downward movement is on his pitches. So I kind of rely on other people to tell me that, and hopefully he's coming back.
By the way, I was surprised to find that Story, that home run that he hit last night was just his second in May.
Yeah, he's been a little cold.
Because I mean, he's been hitting for average. He's got a bunch of doubles and some triples. I was surprised it was just the second homer this month.
Here's one from Lee. It says, "Dear Eric, Tammy, Julie, and Gracie Bell." I had to look this one up. I believe this is Friday Night Lights. This is an interesting one from Lee. "Should Manny Machado really be the number one shortstop? Carlos Correa is on pace for a 30-30 season and had a 20-game slump already. Machado hasn't shown that he's a 300 hitter yet in the league, and his 20 steals last year looked to be an outlier."
I do think it's close, but I think it really maybe just comes more down to just the experience and the track record for Machado. And I realize last year was a breakout, so you know it's not that much of a track record of being an elite. But he's built up to it, and I just have a slight bit more trust in Machado.
How about this one from Jesse? "Interesting trade offer in an NL-only 5x5 league. Giving up Stanton and Jake Lamb, getting Chris Bryant and Michael Conforto." Woo!
I'd do it. NL-only especially, I think it's a little easier to give up the best player in a deal when you're getting... You know, because there's no waiver wires to fill in gaps in an NL-only league. It's everybody's owned of value, basically. So to get two starting caliber hitters And one is still very high end in Bryant. I think that's worth doing. I'll give it a B minus.
And I'm going to go C minus here. I hear what Scott's saying about, you know, two clear starters, whereas Lamb is more of a question mark, but it is NL only. You're probably going to start Lamb. And as much as I expect better things for Bryant, I expect much, much better things for Stanton going forward. And he's the difference maker for me.
And Ben asks, first of all, he dropped two y'alls, which is interesting. He says, I thoroughly enjoy listening to y'all. 12-team head-to-head category. Yeah. Am I saying that right?
I think so. I'm not much of a y'all guy, even though I spent my first 22 years in Georgia.
He dropped three y'alls in here. I thoroughly enjoy listening to y'all. 12-team head-to-head categories. Hits is an extra cat. Could y'all help me out with this trade? I send Jose Bautista. I get Justin Upton and Odubel Herrera. Y'all are the best.
Thank y'all. I can't do it. D plus. Sorry, y'all.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. I'll even go D. No way, Jose.
He's a leadoff hitter extraordinaire.
Actually,
Joey Bats.
Yes way, Jose. Hold on to him.
Yeah, all right. Don't give up Bautista. Guys, thank you. Great show. Enjoyed it very much. Now we know. I mean, like, Bryant is not a first name? Really?
Who's a Bryant? Real quick.
But my brother-in-law's brother, Bryant.
Bryant Gumbel?
Bryant Gumbel.
Oh, there we go.
Bryant Johnson. That's an athlete.
Stan corrected.
I do think of it as more of a last name, though. It's kind of like I was saying earlier. Like, you see these, you hear these kids being named Hudson now, and I'm sure there's plenty of other examples. That's my son's name is Everett. You can make the case that's more of a last name too.
You could, but Everett White. I said this when I first found it. That is a superstar name, Everett White.
Evans.
Destined for greatness.
Absolutely. He is a superstar.
All right, guys. Thank you. Have a great weekend. I'm Adam Azer. Thank you all for listening. We'll talk to you Monday.